Shonda Rhimes is a TV showrunner for the top-rated ABC programs Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, and in the typical celebrity profile, I would ask her how she manages all that and raises three daughters. You know, the how does she do it type interview. But in her new memoir called Year of Yes, you won't find the typical celebrity answer. Rhimes describes how she taught herself to say yes. Yes to accepting that she needed help raising those kids. Yes to admitting she was overweight. It all started back in Thanksgiving 2013 when her older sister was actually kind of picking on her.
The actual year itself, or more than a year itself, happened because my oldest sister said to me, "You never say yes to anything." And by that, she meant I never accept any invitations. I never go anywhere. I'd never do anything. And she was right. My life had gotten really small.
What's crazy to me is she's saying this to you at a moment when you are at the top of your game. I mean, when your shows are doing well, Shondaland is up and running, it somehow didn't compute.
The explosion of those shows and the fame that came with it was very daunting for me. And I was not a person who was going to be out at Hollywood parties, living some glamorous life. And my time really was spent going to work and coming home and spending time with my family, because that was what was important to me. And that was it.
One of the ways you talk about this is like your health and your relationship with food and trying to lose weight. We all tell ourselves certain narratives, right, to kind of justify how we're living at any given time. And it's interesting how you identify yours. And I think one of them was something like, my body is a container for my brain.
Yes.
Which seems good at first, because basically you're saying, hey, it's me, my work, my brain.
It was my very feminist statement of don't just look at how a person looks. Your body is really just the thing that you carry your brain around in. That's absolutely not true. You're a whole person for a reason.
And what kind of changes did you make as a result? I'm reading here you lost upwards of 100 pounds in the first year alone.
I did. And really, it was about just realizing that it was work, that I was never going to enjoy it.
It's nice to hear someone say that.
Yeah, I'm never going to be that person. And I really always resented hearing people say, like, you know, you just learn to love it, or it gets easier. It doesn't. It sucks. I'm always going to want to eat the fried chicken. That's never going to change. And sort of accepting that and accepting that it was going to be as much work as succeeding at my job or being a parent made it so much simpler to deal with.
Another area you write about is parenting. And you have three daughters, I guess toddler to tween, right?
Yeah. I have a 13-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
And in the book, you do something striking, I think, for a celebrity, which is to admit that you have paid help taking care of them.
Yeah.
What's the deal with successful women, especially celebrities, like basically hiding that fact?
I think a lot of successful women don't talk about the fact that they have help because it feels shameful. I mean, we're all supposed to be doing this all ourselves, which is crazy because we work. If you're working, how else are you doing it? You're not a magic person. You can't split yourself in two. You're not Hermione Granger with a time turner. You have to have somebody help you. And there's no shame in that. As a matter of fact, I think there's something wonderful about the fact that you are employing another woman, feminist work, to help you in this endeavor. Like, I think that's kind of great.
So much of what you're talking about didn't seem so much as saying yes, but like beating back judgment, right? Like judgment of yourself, judgment from other people, other parents. I mean, is that part of this?
Honestly, I think it's really beating back all the judgments are coming from yourself. It's all the standards you think you're supposed to be living up to that aren't real.
It also meant opening up your life, I think, in some ways to scrutiny. And in fact, you talk about how you almost got married and how that engagement fell apart. What happened?
That was sort of coming to the realization, or being able to say out loud the concept that I don't want to get married, which is a real taboo in our society for some reason. You know, I just think that people feel you're unhappy. Like, marriage and children is their definition of happiness. That's the fairy tale. And if you don't have those things, how can you possibly be happy?
And you're also trying to, I guess, walk the line of not insulting people who do value those things.
Well, and I don't think it has anything to do with them. That's what I think is fascinating, is that my parents have been married forever. They are the most beautiful, happy, most in love couple I've ever seen in my entire life. They make me believe in true love. That doesn't mean that I belittle their marriage by not wanting to get married.
There's also that weird pressure for women, I think, in Hollywood or any other place where it's like, where's your man? Right? Like, I think you've been public about adopting your first two daughters and using mm-hmm. a surrogate for your last. And was there also this sense of like, why is she doing this by herself?
Oh, definitely. I think those questions always get asked. What I found fascinating for me was I have never gotten so much approval and accolades and warmth and congratulations as when I had a guy on my arm that people thought I was going to marry. It was amazing. I mean, nobody congratulated me that hard when I had my three children. Nobody congratulated me that hard when I won a Golden Globe or a Peabody or my 14 NAACP Image Awards. But when I had a guy on my arm that people thought I was going to marry, people lost their minds like Oprah was giving away cards. It was unbelievable.
You've arrived, right? Like all that other stuff was just preamble.
I was fascinated by it because I thought, like, I'm not Dr. Frankenstein. I didn't make this guy. He just is there. Like everything else I actually had something to do with.
I feel like you've spent much of your career trying not to talk about these things. And it's something that was always very admirable, right? Like that, like I always thought, oh, Shonda Rhimes, she's not going to sit around and talk about like the kids and whether there's a man or not. And did you have to like overcome that yourself?
I think I reached a point where for a while my characters were simply just speaking for me. But I think there was a time when I kind of realized that it wasn't even about that. It was about the fact that somehow I didn't think that I had anything to say for myself and that anything I had to say wasn't worth anybody hearing. And so writing it down was this discovery of feeling like, oh, this is what it is.
Looking forward, is there any character you can tell us about, a new character on the horizon that you feel some kinship to?
There are no new characters. I'm purposely, definitely, defiantly making myself not have any new characters right now.
Really? I feel like Twitter is going to explode somehow. Like, this is a spoiler. No new friends, as Drake would say.
I'm having a really good time. Grey's is in this amazing place of resurgence, and Meredith Grey is having this special thing happen to her where, as a widow, she's become a really interesting character. I've been writing this novel for 12 years, and I want to see where it goes. And Olivia Pope is evolving in a way that I had never dreamed, and I cannot wait to see what happens. And so I'm very invested in those things right now, and I'm not ready to focus on anything else at the moment.
Well, Shonda Rhimes, thank you so much for saying yes to us.
Thank you.